You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent magazine for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers and leaders. Each episode, we bring you behind-the-scenes coaching, news analysis, exclusive interviews, technology and more to help you list more, sell more and elevate your results. To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe. Here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Hey, hey, Samantha McLean from Elite Agent Magazine. This week on the podcast, my guest is Sydney-based future trends forecaster and best-selling author Michael McQueen. He is releasing a new book soon called How to Prepare for What's Next, which is a research-driven guide on surviving disruption. In this interview, we talk about the key factors shaping society right now, where he sees potential sources of disruption for the industry, and it's not what you might think, and how new innovations like chatbots, driverless cars, blockchain, and affordability will impact both the industry and life in general. So welcome, Michael McQueen. Thanks for joining me.
My pleasure. Good to be part of it.
Thank you so much. Yeah, so you've just written a book on how to deal with what's next.
Yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about the key factors that are shaping society right now as you see it.
Yeah, well, I guess the title of the book gives away, I guess, a lot of what my focus is, not just in the book, but for a lot of my work as well. So the title being, you know, How to Prepare Now for What's Next, it's dual focus. It's not just the what's next, you know, the future is still ball gazing. And I do a lot of that. I spend a lot of my time looking at the trends that are impacting a whole range of industries. But the stuff that I get most excited about is helping businesses and brands figure out what they need to be doing now. You know, how do you gear up for change? How do you have a culture, a mindset that is ready for the future? The first half of the book looks at this question of what are the things that are coming next. And there are essentially four categories of disruption. And certainly regardless of the industry you're in, these four forms are playing out right now. And certainly we're seeing these in real estate. But the first form of disruption is the form of wide-scale automation. And we've heard a lot about the rise of the robots, the impact of artificial intelligence. And even though it can sometimes be a little bit almost like hyperbole or a bit dramatic, you know, we have these images in our heads of Terminator-style robot and taking over the world. Interesting just to see what is coming to the fore. You know, some of the technology that is having a huge impact. This morning, just before we had our chat, I did a thing on a Today Show for Channel 9 about AI. And it was interesting. I was talking about one of the forms of technology coming into view, which is this amazing translation technology where essentially you can have an earpiece in your ear. And if I'm speaking to you in German and you're listening in English, you'll hear me in your native tongue, you hear me in English, even though I'm speaking German. Then when you reply, I'll hear in German, even though you're speaking in English. And so you think about one piece of technology. It's amazing.
Wasn't there something like that in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy or something like that?
So often science fiction precedes reality, doesn't it?
Yeah, we have seen a lot of automation and things like that in real estate, starting with chatbots and ranging through to automated workflows and things like that. So that'll be really interesting to hear more on that one. What about the trend of empowered consumers? Because we've talked about that a lot in the industry.
Reality is it's every industry, but the consumer today has more information, more options than ever before. The big thing they've got is they've got a voice. They've got a voice, which means they control any business or brand. And we've seen some really high-profile examples of the empowered consumer as a very significant form of disruption. The one that comes to mind often for me is the one, remember that case on a United Airlines flight where it was a guy that was kicked off the flight because they'd overbooked the flight? And, you know, it was interesting that scene when it unfolded, and any of the listeners that remember that news when it hit the headlines, it was just shocking to see this guy bleeding and he'd been beaten up by the security that took him onto the flight. And I mean, that sort of stuff has happened for years. Certainly in America, the idea of overselling flights, overbooking flights, asking people to get off the flight, I mean, that sort of messiness is not unheard of. What was different this time is you had people sitting nearby that guy and they had Facebook Live. And so they turned their phone, they broadcast, didn't just record it, didn't just take a photo, they actually broadcast live that scene as it unfolded, even though they've been asked not to by the security guards. And that was the game changer because all of a sudden the individual person with a smartphone had far more power than the entire marketing department and the legal department of United Airlines. And that's a huge thing we're seeing in all sorts of industries where the consumer has the power, they've got a voice, and we'll talk about this shortly, I guess, looking at that as the impact of that in the real estate space, and it's absolutely profound, particularly in an era where trust is more important than ever, but often shorter on supply than ever before. People are less willing to trust, and the fact is your consumer can erode your brand reputation very quickly. So the empowered consumer is a very significant form of disruption.
Yeah, it's way more than it used to be. I mean, it used to just be, as you say, a review on Yelp or something like that, where people might say that you're not such a great real estate agent. But imagine if someone turned on their phone and Facebook Live the same way that they did with the United Airlines flight.
Yeah.
It's a completely different game. Another thing you talk about in your book is unconventional competition. So can you explain that one a little bit for us?
No, I'd suggest for any listener, and really it's not just in real estate, it's every industry. This is the key one. This is the one that as I'm working with clients, and you know, most of my time is spent working with business leaders or policymakers who are trying to not just identify change, but prepare for disruption. And I often suggest this is the one that people are not paying anywhere near enough attention to. So the form of disruption in unconventional competitors is massive.
Mm.
I mean, in fact, the encouragement I often give to clients is if you want to really understand disruption, don't reach for the telescope. Don't reach for, you know, the long-range lens, what's coming 10, 15, 20 years out. Even though that's of some value, the more important lens to reach for is the wide-angle lens. You need to be focused on the periphery. I'm looking in spots that you may not otherwise pay attention to. I mean, if you're an agent and I say, who's your key competitor? And you're list off the three or four franchise groups who are operating in your suburb. You know, it's Rain and Horn, or it's Richardson and Wrench, or it's McGrath. And you just label that, I guess, the usual suspects, the competitors that are the most obvious ones, traditional competitors. That's probably not where disruption is going to come from. And I guess we'll turn our attention to that too shortly, this idea of who are those unconventional competitors that are coming into the market or are set to come into the market. And how do you make sure, and this is the trap, you don't dismiss them when they come into view, because it's easy to say, oh, we've seen this all before. These guys won't stick. We are the experts. We've been around for 15 years, for 25 years. You know, we've got the experience that they won't last. And it's easy to dismiss or to ridicule unconventional competitors until they start to really take over the market. And then by that point, sometimes it's too late. So you know, in the book, I look at a number of examples in different industries of unconventional competition. I mean, one that really stands out and often resonates with audiences is what's happening right now in the optometry market. So there's a piece of technology over in the States that's just proving to be a huge game changer in the optometry world, and it's a technology called Opturnative, and allows you to do a full eye examination using the camera in your phone, your tablet device, your laptop. You then submit that diagnostic. You get your prescription back very, very quickly. You then jump online and purchase glasses from anywhere you choose, and they get delivered to your door.
Wow.
No need to go near your optometrist to actually get glasses now. And that technology is sending shockwaves throughout the market in the US, and it's just about to land in Australia. In fact, Specsavers, I believe, are working on this technology themselves. So it's interesting when I talk to optometrists and I say, what are the biggest threats? And I'll say, well, it's the chain stores like OPSM, with the little niche players that are coming to the market, the Oscar Wileys and the rest. I'll say, yeah, those traditional competitors are there, but it's the one that's coming out of left field, like the alternatives of the world, that technology, that's the stuff that you can be most disruptive. So that third form is a key one.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's interesting. And I suppose in the real estate industry, we've heard the term Uber of real estate a lot because Uber is the most famous disruptor. But yes, it would be very interesting to get into what could be unconventional competition in the real estate industry as well in this discussion. The fourth one is emerging generations.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. That's where I started my research career like 14 years now, actually. So I'm one of the people. There's only a few of us in Australia that really focused on this diligently, and that was to look at demographic trends. So I wrote a book, gosh, years ago now, probably 7 or 8, 9 years ago now, looking at millennials and Gen Y and what's making them tick. And where I started out my career research-wise was by interviewing 80,000 millennials around Australia starting back in 2004. And so this is a group I've spent a lot of years now tracking very closely, but not just them, but Generation Z as well, the ones coming after them. And just looking at what does this mean right now as we stand at 2018 and look at the next decade, how disruptive are emerging generations going to be? And we're talking about a generation that is the largest demographic cohort in history, larger than the baby boomers if you look around the world, massive generation who've grown up with technology, who have very different expectations, how you motivate them, how you attract, how you engage them as a workforce or a consumer base is really different. And so a big section of the book is how do you crack that millennial code? How do you break through to them in a meaningful way as consumers, but also as a workplace?
That's a really interesting topic just on its own, I think, because a lot of people do sort of struggle with both how do we market to this group of people, number one, and number two is, you know, how do we attract the best talent? In your book, which I've read parts of and it's incredibly interesting, How are you seeing some of these trends being played out in real estate businesses right now? So in different parts of the book, you've talked about different parts of the industry and things like that. So let's kick off with some stuff on automation and chatbots and things like that. So I was interested in Jill. So talk to me about Jill.
So Jill is a technology, a robotic secretary or receptionist, essentially, that Jones Lang LaSalle have developed in the last 12 or 18 months, based in their head office there. I think it's on George Street down in the CBD of Sydney. And the idea is Jill is this robotic assistant that will take appointments, greet new visitors, sign them in. At the moment, and to be really honest, it's a little bit gimmicky, but it's an indication of where we're going. And a lot of those basic customer service roles for many organizations will be taken over by robotics and be automated in the next few years. And the role of chatbots is huge. So, I mean, just looking at some of the predictions, Gartner's prediction is by 2020, 85% of customer service interactions could well be done using algorithms rather than human beings in a call center. You know, we'll talk as we go along about the strategies for how that, if you're a principal or just an agent, you know, how do you stay relevant? One of the interesting things is, as the world races toward automation, the value of really good human being customer service interaction, dealing with admin staff that are just on the money, who know their stuff, that's actually going to be a key differentiator. I remember hearing a number of key voices in the real estate space talk years ago at a conference as part of a panel, and they said, you know, don't skimp on admin staff. Don't just get the cheapest person you can have to come in for $28,000, $35,000, $45,000 a year. Spend a bit extra, get a really good admin person, because that first impression that they can make, the level of service they can give, has the potential to, you know, make or lose you tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars, even though you may have only paid an extra $5,000 or $10,000 a year in their salary to get that good person. So automation is going to be interesting because it's a disruption, but it's also for real estate an opportunity as well to differentiate. So, you know, certainly that Jill one is an interesting one to watch. The big disruption we'll see that's going to impact a whole range of industries in the next few years is when our cars become automated. At the moment, it's still a little bit clunky. We've got some tests going on right now that are probably the most advanced tests happening in Phoenix in Arizona, being done by Waymo, which is Google's driverless car outfit. And they're probably doing a better job of the testing even than, say, Uber are at the moment. Now, Uber are getting a whole lot of headlines, some of them for the wrong reasons, because I mean, that accident a little while ago with the woman who was hit by one of Uber's driverless cars was just really sad. And so that gets all the headlines and it makes people nervous and scared. But the reality is there's a lot of companies in this space doing some really interesting testing. And the smartest people I'm speaking to in this area are predicting that by about 2027, driverless cars will be somewhat mainstream. So you think about the impact of that on a whole range of industries. I mean, the paid parking industry, for instance, how much it costs to pay to park your car anywhere right now, particularly in the CBD of most cities. You'll never pay to park your car anywhere ever again, you know, because your car will drop you at work, let it head home and wait for you until you're finished and come back and pick you up at the end of the day. Or your driverless car drops you at work and goes into a pool of other driverless cars, Uber style, earning you cash while you're at work. So, you know, it then ferries other people around. So, you know, it'll have an impact on a range of industries. For the real estate industry, one of the things we'll see is driverless vehicles are going to make commuting a whole lot easier. What that's going to mean is we'll see a lot of people who right now are hanging within sort of 5 to 8 Ks of the CBDs suddenly able to move away from the CBD area, because driverless cars will have a huge impact on traffic flow and commute time. So you'll see, for instance, I mean, here I'm based in Sydney. So you think about in the Sydney context and similar things in Melbourne and Brisbane, where people right now were maybe staying in suburbs like Lane Cove or Gladesville, or to the south they'll be in Marrickville, or to the north they may not go further north to say Neutral Bay or Forestville. Suddenly they'll head a whole lot further out, another 5-10 Ks, because the commute becomes far more manageable when you're in a driverless vehicle. It also means the design of homes will be different. I mean, we will see quite likely in the next 10, 15, 20 years, garages may disappear entirely. You may not have a carport anymore in the way you've got them now. So you think about the impact that'll have on people being able to renovate homes, build granny flats in the space that will now free up. But also it'll mean that the whole layout and design of homes changes once car ownership no longer becomes the norm, because you can hire a driverless Uber car at the drop of a hat on your phone, removing the need to own a vehicle in the first place. So some of these implications of driverless cars will be very, very interesting to watch and play out.
I sort of thought at one point that you're going to have a lot more time on your hands.
The reality is that was the prediction a century ago, that, you know, technology would give us all this leisure time and most of us are busier than ever. paperless offices, remember that prediction? But the interesting thing about driverless cars, looking at the impact on other industries, for instance, not just the paid parking industry, but the insurance industry. So when you follow the thought here, you have an accident in a driverless vehicle, who's at fault? Who makes the claim on their insurance? And so KPMG's prediction is that 80% of revenues for auto insurers could well disappear in the next decade to 10 to 15 years because of driverless vehicles. And I read an interesting report by the CEO of Allstate, which is one of the US's largest auto insurers, and he said, this is coming. He said, we cannot ignore it. We've got to get ready for it now. We've got to shift our business models. I mean, think about other industries like the car rental market. We're talking the Hertz and the Budgets and the Avises of the world. And look at the impact on, say, roadside assistance, NRMA, RACQ, RACV, all of these companies that have existed to service drivers that will not need to exist in the same way in the years to come. So, I mean, the list goes on. There's a whole range of industries, even the car industry itself. I mean, if you're not buying vehicles anymore, if we are all using in 30 years or 20 years' time driverless Uber-style services where you don't actually own the car, you just rent the car when you need to get from point A to point B, you think about the impact on car makers themselves, and that's going to be absolutely huge. I read a prediction that within 30 years, owning a car will be like owning a horse today. You'll do it as a hobby or a passion, but not as your primary mode of transportation. So, and then you look at the driverless truck industry, and that's a massive one as well. So the driverless stuff, I mean, we could talk about this one for ages, but you're looking at other things in real estate. Other areas that automation is going to have any impact is, you know, online auctions we're already seeing come into view with Sale Easy Auction Pay, which was launched by Macquarie last year. The impact of virtual reality and augmented reality, how that's going to transform the whole notion of property inspections, people not turning up for physical inspections, but putting a headset on or just driving past a property, holding their phone up, and geotagging technology allowing the phone to load up a virtual tour, overlaying over their phone as an augmented reality tour. And it would change the way consumers engage with property in some really interesting ways, and probably some ways it'll be challenging for agents, because if we're really honest, it's not just the head you've got to win in the big way, it's the heart.
Yeah. It would have to change a lot of the way that you build relationships, I think. If the open home is the place where a lot of people open their relationship account with buyers and sellers, you would definitely have to come up with a different way to replace that in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. The thing I think we'll probably see really change the game for real estate in the next few years is the impact of blockchain on contracts, the way contracts are executed.
Yeah.
And we'll see that in the commercial space.
That's actually something we did a bit of research into last year, and we're seeing at the moment a lot of people trying to offer properties for sale using Bitcoin, which, you know, Australia's not set up for, but I think that's only a matter of time, don't you?
Oh, definitely. I think the cryptocurrency thing, in some ways, it got more attention than it deserved last year, but I think there's no doubt that Bitcoin will be a player in the coming few years and cryptocurrencies generally. And the prediction that I think is probably most accurate is that cryptocurrency will probably settle in the next 10 years, particularly Bitcoin, as one of the leading six currencies globally. So there'll be the US dollar, there'll be the RMB, there'll be the pound, there'll be the euro, and then there'll probably be, I'm not sure actually, but it could be a couple of other currencies come in next. It just depends what comes to the fore, but Bitcoin will be in the top six. So there's a lot to watch there when it comes to the way we transact.
There's a Royal Banking Commission going on at the moment. And I remember the start of Bitcoin, blockchain, all that sort of thing was during the GFC a few years back when people sort of decided that maybe they needed a currency system outside of the traditional. The underlying technology for Bitcoin, which is blockchain, has some remarkable uses in real estate or even in just property, if we were set up for it. So it could mean the end of trust accounting as we know it, right?
Yep, definitely. I think this is the beauty of blockchain as a technology, as a platform, is it's far more transparent and far more reliable. And I think particularly as a fallout from the Royal Commission, the big word we've had come up time and time again is transparency. Transparency in so much of what we take for granted in banking and finance, I think is going to result in people wanting to look for alternatives. And it may well be that blockchain as a platform, as a way of transacting, will be part of that solution.
Yeah, I think it's a fascinating space that we could probably talk all day on as well. Suffice to say, it does get interesting when you remove the traditional middlemen like the lawyers and the solicitors and even to a degree our financial institutions. I often wonder what the world would be like if our land titles office was blockchain-based, for example. How would they be able to justify so much stamp duty? But that's a debate for another day as well. So I just wanted to ask you quickly about 3D printing as well, because 3D printing features heavily in your book as well. And we've just started seeing 3D printing of houses and things like that. So as a trend, how do you see that one playing out and perhaps impacting the real estate industry?
Well, I'm not sure about the impact on real estate. So the impact on construction generally will be very interesting to watch play out. So we're seeing a couple of construction companies now using 3D printing at a macro scale. To be really honest, it's pretty ugly stuff. The stuff they're building is not attractive. It's not super functional. I mean, everyone who's listening will have seen a headline pop up on Facebook about a house that was built in 23 hours. And in many cases, it's emergency housing for people in parts of the world where they just need to quickly erect housing that's going to be safe and reliable. But it isn't going to probably have a huge impact on construction at a residential level in Australia anytime soon. What it will impact, though, is larger scale stuff. For instance, we see the Jubilee line over in the UK being built right now. The new train that they're building over in the UK, they're using a lot of 3D printing to construct the interiors of all the train stations. So we're seeing 3D printing at a large scale being used. But then at the other end of the spectrum, at the micro scale, we're seeing in 3D printing having a huge impact on consumer products. So, for instance, most of the main shoe manufacturers right now, so we're talking Nike, we're talking New Balance, Adidas, are all looking at developing technology to be able to print customized shoes for their customers. And eventually the goal is that once you've got a 3D printer or access to one, you will print your own shoes at home. And what you'll purchase from a shoe manufacturer, for instance, is the design file. And that changes the entire game of manufacturing and distribution. So that's probably the one to really watch. From a real estate perspective, I don't know how much of an impact it'll have, but from a consumer perspective on everyday life, I think the impact of 3D printing will be profound over the next 10 to 15 years. The only way I can see it playing out in the short to medium term in 3D printing, it was an example I picked up from a colleague who's a professor at Griffith University, and she was actually sharing with me that at the university they've got 3D printing labs they've had for the last few years. Her son was moving out of a place and had broken a fitting on, I think, the dishwasher or the fridge. And so rather than losing some of the bond, they measured up the piece that had been broken and then printed a replacement part.
Wow.
You'd never have known that it had broken in the first place. Whereas something that bespoke, that specific, in the past, you'd have had to, you know, go to the manufacturer or you'd just have to leave it broken, for instance, and they could print a replacement part. So that was an interesting example probably of how that could play out.
Yeah, that's definitely going to affect the tradie side of things in that case. As I sort of said in the beginning, we have been talking, you know, we've used the D word a lot in the real estate industry, the disruptor word. Airbnb, do you see them as a threat?
Only in so much as people, for instance, investors are buying homes now with the express intent of using that property as an Airbnb rental rather than going through the traditional model of getting a property manager to let the property out. So that could be an impact certainly on rent rolls and on the income that comes from that property management side of the business. I think if you're looking from a real estate perspective, who are those unconventional competitors you've got to keep an eye on? It's probably not Airbnb. It could well be Google. I mean, Google, the reason they've got so much power is they own the data. In the real estate business, as much as a relationship business, and it certainly is, it is more than ever, it's a data business. And so Google, of course, have control of the data in some really important ways. And that also means the other two to watch out for would be, you know, the realestate.com.au or the domains of the world, because they control not just the data as well, but they also control the customer. They've got the customer's eyeballs. They've got the benefit of attracting people to the real estate space. They are the contact point. I think that's a more likely threat, for instance, than the threat of Airbnb. Looking at unconventional competition in the real estate space, the ones that have really had an impact recently would be, you know, some of these alternate services like Purple Bricks and Buy My Place. One of the co-founders of Google launched House, H-A-U-S, a couple of years ago. That's an interesting model that's similar to that, the idea of for a 1% commission, they'll help you do all the preparation and then broker the deal for selling your home, removing an agent and their commission. And even though in Australia, I think we've justifiably said, well, that's only a very niche part of the business. Most consumers, most vendors won't go through Purple Bricks or one of these alternate providers. Around the world, it's a different story. So in the US right now, 20% of homes are sold without an agent. And in Canada, it's as high as 30%. And so I think we've got to keep an eye on the unconventional competitors, probably not Airbnb so much, but some of these other players are the ones we've got to, I guess, be mindful of and be alert to.
There's certainly a few in the US that we've seen crop up, very cashed up too. You know, there's a lot of Wall Street investment in prop tech over there. And you've got things like Open Door and Compass and things like that, who are big companies who can buy properties and then they'll do them up and flip them. And I would say that's unconventional competition. And I mean, the other thing that I'd love you to comment on as well is the topic of affordability. So it's a hot topic at the moment in every state in Australia, particularly for first time home buyers and people like that. Do you think affordability could become a disruptor in terms of, there seems to be a lot of these models cropping up now that are, you know, your brick X's and so on, that are fractional investments. What do you think of those? Are they sustainable? Are they the sort of things that we should be looking out for?
There's no doubt that affordability is an issue, particularly for that younger group of consumers. So millennials coming to the marketplace, and therefore you see millennials who are renting where they want to live but buying an investment property somewhere they can afford. The challenge, therefore, then is that you've got banks tightening up the lending for investor loans, which has a huge impact on demand for properties because you've got people who just can't get the finance to buy an investment property. You're also going to alternate sources like peer-to-peer lending, for instance, to get that financing. So it's certainly that the affordability issue is a big one. And what we're going to see happen shortly, and I don't know how widely known this is, but I understand that a new law has been passed very recently in Sydney where properties within a certain kilometre radius of CBD over a certain size can now be subdivided without having to be limited by local planning regulations. And the idea is we can increase density. So you look at suburbs like Gladesville and Ryde, for instance, you'll probably see any properties that with the old school larger size blocks, people will be buying up a home that they might buy it for $1.2 million, which would be the average, you know, price for a home that's a bit run down, and they'll knock it down and build townhouses, probably two or three townhouses. And that's going to be very common in the next 12 to 18 months. So some of the dynamics of real estate in a few of those middle band markets, so close enough to the city to be attractive still, but far enough out to have larger blocks that are still there. As regulations around development change, that'll probably shift because affordability has just meant that a whole lot of people are locked out of the market. There's just no doubt about it.
Okay, so I'm the owner of a real estate business and I'm listening to this and I'm thinking about, you know, all the things that we've talked about. What's some advice that you would give business owners in the real estate industry today on the sort of things that they should be looking at, thinking about from a practical point of view?
We have heard a lot about disruption over the years, particularly in real estate. I mean, I even just think about my first job out of uni was to work for EAC, Multilist, you know, the Multilist.
Oh, right. Yep, they're still around.
Yeah, my first post-university job. And it was interesting because, of course, at that stage, multiple listing services were on the decline as the web had grown in popularity. And so even just seeing over the time from that being my first job working with agents around New South Wales and seeing what different agents were doing to now, just how much that's changed in really not that many years. And I guess that the challenge for an agent is to not get weary in the face of all this change. It is easy to think, you know, it's just all too hard. I'm just going to check out and do what I know. And I might be 15 years or 12 years away from retirement. I'm just going to coast into retirement. I get that because there's been so much change. My encouragement would be, don't fall into that trap. You can't afford to in the next 5 to 10 years. Because what we've seen already in terms of disruption in real estate ain't nothing yet. There's a lot more to come. So the challenge is to see these disruptions as an opportunity and to realize that I think in many ways it's easier now than it's ever been to be successful in real estate. The barriers to entry are dropping. Technology is making it far easier to reach a far wider audience. But it does mean you need to continue constantly up your game and be savvy. You've got to make sure you're keeping pace with what every other agent in the industry is doing and be one step ahead of it. And one of the great quotes from Jack Welch, the former head of GE, he said, the moment the rate of change outside of business exceeds the rate of change in that business, the end is near. And so consumers, the buyer and the vendor is getting more and more savvy and they expect more all the time. Keep investing in your business. Keep investing in technology. Never get complacent. Another very practical thing is you need to be looking at in your business, what are the things that are causing friction for your clients and for your customers? What are the things that cause irritation, frustration, confusion? The best people to ask are your customers, your clients. Post-settlement, to sit down and actually spend a few minutes and say, what could we have done better? And don't just ask it as a formulaic question. Have a genuine conversation and go, we really want to hear it. And the data is pretty interesting. You look at the research in the marketplace about what causes friction in real estate. It's not providing sensible, realistic price guides on properties. We're not listing the price at all. It's advertising open homes when a property has already had a committed under offer made. It's failing to return phone calls, simple stuff like that. You know, being timely and dealing with people, hiding the faults or failing to address faults, address them with a vendor, sort of trying to paper over things. The post-sales experience, you know, that idea of, do you just leave it for the buyer to pick up their own keys or do you create something special? And we'll talk about that maybe in a couple of moments. And the other thing is also be mindful of using social media in a way that can actually cause irritation for customers, you know, for the buyer. And I've a story from some friends recently who bought a home last week and the agent took a photo of them in front of the sold sign and then without asking their permission posted it on Instagram, and the agent and the people who bought the home had a lot of common friends. And so the first way that these people knew that the photo was out on Instagram was that a whole lot of friends go, oh, we just saw you bought a house. And that sense of almost being an invasion of privacy, just to be sensible about those things and be mindful and to put yourself in the shoes of your consumer or your buyer or your vendor far more frequently. An encouragement I'd also do is do the stuff that's going to make you remarkable. We are in the age of social media. And so give your vendors and your buyers something to rave about on social media. And that may well mean a bottle of champagne when the house goes through or a new house hamper rather than just giving the buyer the keys with a plastic branded key ring. Now, if the house isn't clean, for instance, the vendor hasn't cleaned the house properly, and I actually heard this story from one agent, just a simple thing. House was a bit messy, not really up to standard. So the agent bought them tickets to a movie and said, here's a movie, head off there for a couple of hours, paid for out of his own commission check, a cleaner to come and clean the house. So when the new buyers came back, they came back to a clean house. Simple things that are just impressive. You know, wrap the front door with a ribbon, give them something to take a photo of because it's special and remarkable. These are simple ways to stand out in an increasingly flooded marketplace. Also some really old school stuff. Sponsor local events. Have a marquee at the local school fete or barbecue, just being visible and being that trusted person in the community, and also publicity. PR is still incredibly powerful. We are in the age of the expert. Everyone is looking for expertise. Everyone can be an expert in a way you couldn't be in the past. Hire a publicist. You've all got local radio stations, local newspapers, local blog platforms. You need to be the person in your suburb that is always providing the expert opinion on what's hot, what's not, 5 tips to sell your property this spring. You know, these are things, if you can position yourself as a brand, as an individual, as the expert, and using some publicity to do that, that's incredibly powerful. So there's quite a list of things, but that's what I'm seeing agents who are flourishing in this very disrupted age doing, that's allowing them to stand out.
And they are just simple things, and they're things that everybody can definitely do. Just to close, we did talk a little bit about other industries and how disruption can come from the places that you least expect it. We also talked about how you can learn from other industries. So what industries at the moment do you think real estate agents should be keeping an eye on that we can really learn some good lessons from?
A good one would be the accounting profession. You look at, for accountants, a lot of the transactional stuff has been taken over by technology in recent years. And so smart accountants have realized they need to shift their role. The analogy I heard was a good accountant now is no longer the scorekeeper at the end of the match, i.e. the end of the financial year, doing all the compliance stuff. They're the coach from the sidelines throughout the game. Throughout the year, you as an accountant become the trusted advisor or the coach.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably a little bit the same. As a lot of the transactional stuff has been taken over by technology for agents, how can you learn from what accountants have had to do to shift their mindset around the value they add? That's a messy transition, but it's an important one.
It's a fascinating time that we live in. So thank you very much, Michael McQueen.
To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe.